Good evening, Peter. Welcome to the Space Show.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to take this opportunity to say a few words about the European Southern Observatory. And I might start by describing the organization as it exists at present, and then I'll move on to the VLT, the Very Large Telescope, which would be the major facility of the organization in the future. ESO is supported by eight European member states, the largest of which are Germany, France, and Italy. And it was established some 30 years ago to operate an observatory in the southern hemisphere in Chile. And we've been operating at on a mountain called La Silla for most of that time with a range of telescopes. The European headquarters, I might start out with, based in Garching near Munich in Germany, and that houses the technical and support services of the organization, where instruments and telescopes are designed and many of the instruments are built. It's also a place where there's a science division which stimulates and supports astronomical research in Europe. We have an active studentship program, fellowship program. We have workshops of all kinds. ESO in Garching is also host to the European Coordinating Facility for the Space Telescope. And this is to assist European astronomers in using the Space Telescope. And so the center in Garching is a very active center for astronomical research. In Chile, we have a base in Santiago, and then several hundred kilometers north of Santiago is the observatory at La Silla. And if you like, I can show you some of the facilities on the posters here. Shall we move across?
Yes, okay. But first, why are you in Chile? I mean, is it just because of the southern hemisphere sky, or is it because of the observing is not so good in Europe?
It's a combination of the two. Several of the European countries had their own facilities in the northern hemisphere, and there was a strong interest in establishing a large observatory in the south on a scale that the individual nations wouldn't be able to support themselves. And of course Chile, because the conditions in Chile, in the Atacama Desert, are absolutely superb for astronomy.
What sort of latitude are you at?
Oh, it's about minus 29 degrees.
So you can see a fair amount of the northern sky as well as pretty well all the southern sky.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So it's much better than, say, coming down where Melbourne is at 48 degrees or 38 degrees or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's quite a good latitude from that point of view. Many of the major world's observatories are at similar latitudes, north and south.
Okay, well, let's go and have a look at the observatory. Right, we're now looking at a large photograph showing a mountaintop with a whole lot of white and silver domes. What are these?
Okay, well, this is the La Silla Observatory that we've operated for many years, and there are between 10 and 15 telescopes here, depending on which ones you count. Several of them are collaborations between ESO and individual countries, and others belong to ESO completely. So up at the top, for example, first of all, you see the 50-meter submillimeter radio telescope that's been in operation for 8 years. The big telescope here at the top is the 3.6-meter, somewhat similar to the Anglo-Australian telescope. And beside that is a Cooley auxiliary telescope, 1/2 meter. And then down below that you see the NTT, or the so-called New Technology Telescope, which is a 3.5-meter telescope, been in operation for about 10 years. And it was intended not only to do first-rank science in its own right, but also to serve as a test bed for technical developments leading up to the VLT. So, for example, a relatively thin mirror, very open structures so that the so-called dome seeing is minimized so that we can make the most of the atmospheric clarity on this site. And then below that, we have a range of other telescopes. There's the Schmidt telescope here, which is similar to the Schmidt at Siding Springs. There's a 2.2-meter telescope here, which is a collaboration between ESO and and Germany, 50-50 sharing of the time. A Danish 1.5 meter telescope here, which is used largely for imaging. It's again a collaboration between ESO and Denmark, and then a number of other smaller telescopes on down the mountain. And down at the bottom here, you can see living quarters and offices for those who are working on the mountain. At any one time, there are about 140 people on the mountain, so it's quite an operation to keep this mountain alive. The water is provided from there's a stream that runs way down below the mountain. The water is pumped up, and of course everything else has to be brought up to the mountain. This location is about 2.5 hours away from a town called La Serena, and that's a major town along the Chilean coast, and so that's a major base for infrastructure for us.
But the astronomers don't commute from there every day. They just live on the mountain when they're doing the observing, do they?
That's right. All of the staff work on a Turno system, and they're up here for a week at a time and then down for a week. And the visiting astronomers who come from Europe will spend, the amount of time that's necessary to do their observing, and then they head back via Santiago.
Now, you're at 2,400 meters. Does that cause any problems?
No, not at that level. When you get up to 4,000 meters or so, then you might start to have problems, as, for example, on Mauna Kea in Hawaii. But no, at these altitudes, well, you feel a certain breathlessness in the first day, but it's easy to get adjusted to.
One of the essentials for locating an observatory, of course, is good seeing and clear weather. What's it like there?
Well, on this site, because of the coming of the VLT, we've been doing considerable site testing, and we were also testing then this site as well. And the median seeing here is about 0.75 arc seconds, which is pretty good, but it's fairly typical for good continental sites. We were looking for a site with better conditions, and so for the VLT, we went further north, up towards Antofagasta, several hundred kilometers north, where we found that the seeing was more typically 0.6 or 0.65 arc seconds median, and we have a fairly high incidence of conditions where seeing is better than 0.4 arc seconds. So for the VLT, this was ideal. Well, shall we move on, and I'll show you the developments now related to the VLT.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, we've got a model in front of us, and it has four large domes, and it looks like three fire hydrants in front of them. I guess from the scale of the model, these fire hydrants are about 4 or 5 meters high. What are they?
That's right. Well, those small units are 1.8 meter telescopes, which are part of the interferometer component of the VLT. The VLT being the very large telescope, and the very large component of it are the four 8 meter diameter telescopes, each one of which in its own right is a very powerful telescope.
I mean, after all, the Halley telescope in Mount Palomar is only 5 meters. Well, I say only 5 meters.
That's right. So this is there's been a move around the world to step up to the next generation of optical telescope, which is in the 8 to 10 meter class. The VLT, when it's completed, the combined collecting power of these telescopes will be equivalent to a 16-meter telescope, so it'll be the largest in the world from that point of view. In addition to the large collecting area of the individual telescopes and the combination, there's also the possibility of operating these telescopes together as an interferometer, and that means that when you combine the signals in a coherent way from the different telescopes, you have the resolving power equivalent to a telescope of over 100 meters diameter. And that's what these small fire hydrants, as you call them, are for. In addition to the 4 8-meter telescopes, these smaller units provide additional baselines to give you the full, to take advantage of the size of the mountain and to give you the maximum resolving power. So in other words, you can see details which are very fine. This telescope will, with the conditions of this superb site, will give you sensitivity something like 10 times or 12 times better than a typical 4-meter telescope like the Anglo-Australian telescope, and it'll give you a resolving power. You'll be able to see fine details about 30 times finer. So it's a big step forward from typical 4-meter class telescopes of today.
And these smaller telescopes, they appear to be mounted on rails. Is that because you can move them into the right position?
That's right. That's the idea. The small telescopes can be moved around to different stations, and then when they're located at the next station, then another observation is made. And in this way, you start to fill in the pattern so that you simulate more and more completely an aperture of a very large telescope.
Now, when they built the Mount Palomar telescope, 5 meters was about the limit of the technology. You had problems with the mirror bending under gravity, especially as you tilted the telescope. What's the breakthrough, the technological breakthrough, that's permitting now much larger telescopes to be built?
Well, there are two major approaches that have been taken. One which has been used at the Keck telescope in Hawaii is to comprise the mirror of many different segments. Each segment is quite substantial in size, but they're all supported on a common structure, and they together comprise a large paraboloid of 10 meters diameter. The other approach, the one that we've taken, is to make a so-called meniscus mirror. That means a very thin mirror, which of course couldn't possibly support itself under the force of gravity. It needs to be supported, and continually these supports have to be adjusted. There are hundreds of actuators supporting this telescope, so that as it turns to look at different objects, the gravitational forces change, and these have to be compensated by these actuators. So the mirrors are 8.2 meters across, they're only 17 centimeters thick, and they have to be continually, actively adjusted to correct for the different forces working on them. So these thin mirrors are, for their size, extremely lightweight, and this has been a major development that's made possible the 8-meter telescopes for the VLT.
The standard telescope mirror consists of glass, usually coated with aluminium. What are you doing on this telescope? I mean, is it the same material, just thinner?
Yes, it is essentially the same material. The material being used is called Zuradur, and it's a kind of glass which has very good thermal properties, so that it does not change very much as the temperature is changed.
Now, everyone knows when you look out at the star, you know, twinkle, twinkle, little star. Twinkling, of course, is caused by refraction in the Earth's atmosphere. With this adjusting mirror, be able to cope with that twinkling and remove it?
Not these large mirrors themselves. They won't be able to move quickly enough. But down the mirror chain, in other words, you have the large primary mirror, the light is reflected to a secondary, tertiary, and so on. At some point down the chain, there's a smaller mirror which can be adaptively controlled, adaptively in the sense that it adapts to the atmospheric conditions. This kind of technology is new. It's been done at ESO in the last several years. And as I say, it corrects in real time for the distortions of the atmosphere. And so in this way, you can get you can see much finer detail than you could otherwise, because you don't have the smearing effect of the atmosphere. So this will certainly be used on the VLT, absolutely.
And what sort of research projects will you be able to do with the telescope that you can't do at present?
Well, of course, you'll be able to see much more distant objects, much fainter objects, and you'll be able to see objects with much greater resolution, so with much finer detail. So for studying very, very distant objects, or galaxies perhaps, as they were forming, looking back over a large fraction of the age of the universe to the era of forming galaxies, we would like to be able to study systems at those epochs. There's a whole gamut of astronomical, virtually all areas of astronomy will be touched by a telescope of this kind. This telescope, will be the workhorse of the next century for astronomy.
And who's financing it all?
Well, the eight European countries that I mentioned have pooled the resources to fund ESO itself and also the VLT. The total bill for the VLT, in terms of contracts, is about 550 million Australian dollars. So it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to be spent by any one country, and this is one of the reasons why the countries pool the resources to operate a facility like this. The interferometry, the small telescopes here, and the interferometry capability, and the combined CUDE as well, that aspect of the VLT has been slowed down in its development for financial reasons. And this is one reason why an Australian involvement in the VLT would be advantageous, because it would jumpstart this activity on the interferometry, which is really one of the most exciting aspects of the VLT.
Will Australian astronomers have access to this facility?
Oh, absolutely. Astronomers from the different countries have access to the ESO telescopes purely on the basis of the quality of their scientific proposals. And normally it works out that that their access is more or less in proportion to the contributions of the countries to ESO in general. The contributions are related to the GNP of the country, and of course the number of astronomers per capita is more or less the same in the different countries. I think that in this competition Australia would do very well. I think that also Australia brings to ESO a certain special expertise, both scientific and technical, in addition to the financial contribution. And so I'm very enthusiastic myself about Australian membership in ESO.
You have some contacts with Australia. You studied here, didn't you?
Yes, I did my PhD at the University of Sydney, and so I have my own special reasons for being very favourable towards Australian participation in ESO. I must say I've always had a very high regard for the level of science in Australia, and astronomy in particular. And so again, I think that Australian membership would be a very good thing for ESO, but I also think that Australian membership would be a very good thing for Australia, because I think it represents terrific opportunities, both scientific and technical.
Have you been able to do any observing at our observatories?
Oh yes. Over the years, of course, when I was a student, I worked at Parkes and Molonglo, and more recently I've been involved in collaborations using the Anglo-Australian Telescope and also the Australia Telescope. So yes, I keep up my contacts with my Australian colleagues.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us tonight on the Space Show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.